Hi, I'm John.
Hi, I'm Olivia.
Hi, I'm Matt.
And this week we've watched Under the Cloak of War, and now we're going to argue about whether it's going to make us quit Star Trek.
My first issue. Why did Pike host the dinner? Because he seems like a fucking sociopath now.
If
Just
he's not a
don't.
sociopath, okay,
He's read the logs, right? He knows their background and their history.
either he's a sociopath, or his boss is a sociopath, or his boss's boss is a sociopath. Either way, somewhere up the chain between Pike and the civilian government, someone is a whack job.
No, I got mad at him. I was like, you should have known better. No one was
And
ready
you
for
should.
this.
So I want to watch this episode for Trek Corps to review it, which thanks guys, you're all great if you're listening.
Sorry, can
And I
you
had
not
to sit.
mention your other allegiances, please? Thank you.
Okay.
I'm
So
joking.
can I just say, when I was Googling around this, I read that without realizing it
Yes.
was
But I sat down. I was like, we got Ambassador, Cold War tensions, Space Bash. I was like, I'm gonna love this episode. And then every minute I got madder until the end, where I just about to vibrate with rage, knowing that I can talk to no one about this for 2 weeks.
Deeply upsetting, to be
You know
honest.
what was the deeply
I'd
upsetting
like
part
them
about
to
this?
take it back.
I watched this back to back with the musicals. You have to imagine poor friend of the podcast, Suzanne, if you're around, whoever you are, Suzanne, I hope you're having a great day in Vegas. Just watching you vibrate with anger.
That was the episode you guys were watching.
We did Under the Cloak of War and the musical back to back. I was just literally vibrating with rage.
Oh, I'm so
And then
sorry,
we did
John.
that, the Gorn finale episode, and I just basically. I'm so glad I've quit smoking.
I get the dinner thing, but the thing that I kept coming back to, because that's an interesting but bad scene, was the jambalaya is still set over there. Are they not actually eating? Because the shot opens with that really nice looking jambalaya, and
I'm
then
sorry.
you never see it again. No one's eating it. And in my mind, as I start to wonder in this episode, which happens a lot, is what's happening with the food? Food brings people together. At the very least, it shuts everybody up. So
I
why are
don't know if I just don't know about jambalaya, but to me that was a paella, and I'm so sorry to
they? A
Pike, but
jambalaya and
that
a
was
paella are
dry.
very, they look the same, but they're very different.
I thought jambalaya was more liquid, it was more saucy. That was dry
It
rice with
is.
shrimp.
As also, can I quite
There's more of
frankly
a
say,
bisque base to it at jambalaya. So
can I also
maybe the
just,
camera angle didn't do justice.
here's the
This
other
is
point
weird.
about it, about Pike making jambalaya, right? Why is Pike making jambalaya? You can ask many reasons, but it comes back to fundamental reasons for me, which is that Ben Sisko made jambalaya. That's the only reason he's making fucking jambalaya. It's like, ah, another Starship captain made jambalaya. It's like, fuck you guys.
You will
Make
never
the
be
man,
Sisko.
make the man, make like something fuck. What do people in Montana eat? Sand? I don't know.
The ribs, was it in the first series? He's basically barbecuing the whole time. And you're like, I can get behind this, a
Someone else would
barbecuing
like
captain.
that.
Yeah, this is great. But
You want him to make proper American food,
I
John?
want him to make something that will make ancient American hero Guy Fieri proud.
In your Republican
Captain
era.
Pike's welcome to Captain Pike's Flavor Town. That's what I want, instead of like Jamie Oliver's jambalaya.
I don't want him to make anything with seasoning. Let's not give him that.
But there's a whole scene about seasoning in this, and it's just like, this is crap subtext. Not subtext. Let's have a conversation about the parsley that can kill you, but we're actually talking about other things that can kill you. And oh God, I know we're gonna get into this, but
I mean, there's a lot about this episode that I think both me and Matt, because both come from historical backgrounds, you're a bit more further in your career than me, being a horrible master student with no money and prospects. But
Your prospects are far better than any of the crap I've done.
I think we both come from backgrounds we can sort of appreciate part of this episode. But do you remember back in the days, your first encounter with Star Trek? At all.
I do, and I'm thinking I'm considerably older than either of you. It was in the deep dark 80s, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh
We
no.
moved to Toronto, and we used to get the Buffalo Fox affiliate. on the cable. And on a Saturday, they would do World at War, 10,000 Days, which was like this weird Vietnam documentary that I watched a bit on YouTube, and it is nuts. I have to dig up the name. And then it did Twilight Zone and then Star Trek, right? So there's this...
You start the morning with Laurence Olivier, Down the Road, The Soldiers Came.
Yeah, exactly.
And you work through, what if America was okay? What if everything we did in Vietnam was okay? Rod Serling's, oh, I fucked you up for the evening. And then Star Trek.
Yeah,
that seems great. Correct.
It's fantastic. Correct. So I'm a kid, right? So I've got airplanes blowing stuff up, and then I've got F4s blowing stuff up in color. So this is fantastic. And then you've got literally episodes that I can remember from the Twilight Zone. And the biggest one was the Bill Shatner one, going from that to Trek. Cause you're like, ooh, you're like 8 or 9 going, this is weird. But that was Trek for me. And they never, to my memory, they didn't play the episodes in order. So it was literally like some guy sat there in the office on a Saturday going, oh, next tape, and literally just grabbing whichever one was on the Star Trek shelf and shoving it in. So it was that was my introduction to it. So this was, I don't know, a year or two before Next Gen came out. And I was, as you are when you're little, how can they be replacing Kirk? We've got movies. We'd go to the cinema to see. I'm not going to say which Star Trek movies I saw in the cinema because that will date me. But
I think Voyage Home was one of them.
It was, yeah.
The greatest film of all time.
There's just so much to love about that movie because it's nuts.
Back then, was there an episode you distinctly remember and thinking, what the hell is this? Like, was there an I Quit moment then? Or was there a moment later where you were like, I can't watch the show?
I've been quite lucky in that up until recently, there hasn't really been a I want to quit this sort of thing. There's been opportunities where I've felt disillusioned, but then I've stopped paying for Sky, so I don't have to watch it anymore. Yeah, things like that. Back then, there were episodes that scared me. I can remember having nightmares over City on the Edge of Tomorrow. Ooh. And mainly because of Kirk killing or allowing Joan Collins to die. I thought that was just wrong.
Heart was broken.
I know. And, it's that shot at the end where they're like, what happened? And it's just, Bill doing like blue steel right down the barrel of the camera, isn't it? And
let's get the hell out of here.
Yeah. That. And, but I can remember just thinking, that was, they were in love.
It's in the end forever. At least it's got a lot going for it. Coherent plot, acing, morals.
We have no war Kirk crimes. And Spock having like a domestic life. It's very beautiful to watch. It's very healing, actually.
And we're going to go great from that healing experience to Under the Cloak of War. I'm going to start this one because I'm mad. There's something that starts making me mad quite quickly.
I think you need this.
I need this. I've needed this for a long time.
I'm having a large sip of my drink.
Yeah, I've got a glass of Havana Club here. It's great.
How dare you? Not even Saint Lucian rum, John.
There's no Saint Lucian rum in the house. You didn't bring me enough. Anyway. So, the Enterprise is rendezvousing with the USS Kelsey Bay, which is a great-looking ship. I like it. It looks like a diplomatic cruiser. It looks like if you shot at it, it would explode. So I like it for that. And they're bringing on Ambassador Dacra, who is a Klingon whose makeup looks like he's wearing a hat.
Yeah.
Like, all respect to Robert Wisdom, it does look like they just put the makeup on top of his head and then went to lunch.
I also take issue with his hair because they're essentially supposed to be dreads, but they're not good. They're not good enough. They're like Tyler Perry wigs. So fix it, Star Trek.
When I saw it was Robert Wisdom, I was like, this can't be bad. Because he always sort of like appears in TV shows, smashes it, and then leaves again. And he was great. Was he in Burn Notice for a while and stuff?
Yeah.
He just sort of shows up, cashes the check, and leaves, and then gets called back. That's what he does. So I saw this, and you're like, ooh, Klingon war criminal. Robert Wisdom, yeah, bring it on. And then what you are about to explain happens.
So he comes on, and Dacre, who is this Klingon general who defected the Federation, is now acting as a diplomat at large to solve crises on the border, which, like, number one, like, yeah, who's basically, it's like, who is the best person to represent American interests in post-war Europe? Adolf Eichmann. It's that level, like, maybe
is he
maybe,
the
maybe,
only good Klingon? Is that what's happening?
I think that, well, there's a very much that implication here. They're very, for an episode about the Klingon War, they're deeply unwilling to interrogate the whole reason the Klingons went to war or anything about it. It's just, we need Dacre, he's a Klingon man of peace. And then they play it, it's like, ooh, the Boatswain Whistle is an Enterprise tradition, which is my first oh fuck off moment. Like, oh, it's just a ship's tradition. No, fuck off, make it a Starfleet thing. Just like, not everything has to be the Enterprise.
How dare you? Everything is the Enterprise, and the Enterprise is everything.
I kind of have to agree with Olivia there.
Thank you.
I don't like it.
Sucking up to both of you now, because it's early in the episode. I'm sure I'm going to piss one of you off in a minute.
So then we cut from Dacre wanting a tour to Ortega's just being racist on the bridge, which is great.
I don't know. I wanted to, like, let you guys lead into this aspect of, like, I don't know, war trauma, but they're just really racist. And I'm trying to reconcile that with their emotional turmoil. But I was really disappointed in them.
Plenty of people have gone to war and not come out of it thinking that their enemies aren't people.
Yeah.
In fact, most people go to war and come out of it not thinking their enemies aren't people.
If anything, it should make you consider that a more dangerous prospect or way of thinking.
Yeah, but that bit makes me think this is where the whole Ortega's storyline, they've forgotten that they haven't actually showed us it yet because of all the things that happened. Because clearly she is a badass war hero pilot who saw some stuff.
But we don't know what she saw.
Exactly. And all we ever get is her going, in the war, it was terrible. And you're like, show us. This was the opportunity to do it.
Yeah, not even one little flashback we could have given her.
I mean, I know that what's her name? I forgot the name of the actress. Melissa DeVere's schedule was massively interrupted by the passing of her partner, which, like, happened just before they started filming season two, so obviously they had to change the schedule around that. Which, fair enough. But what they didn't do was then rewrite the character's arc to take into account that they wouldn't be able to do all the plots they obviously wanted to do.
And
but
let's be fair, this is only 42 minutes long. It's not like they didn't have the rest of the hour to fill up with a little bit of backstory here, people. Oh, that rant for later, sorry. But
But it is like, I'm looking at Memory Alpha and it says, Ortegas is uneasy. Ortegas is not uneasy. Ortegas is basically trying to explain to her that fucking Dacre should be at the Hague. and then her list of all these reasons that he's actually a good person, which, like, maybe if, you know, we knew what these treaties... I mean, actually, you know, we don't need to know these treaties are good. We can take her his word for it. But I still think Ortegas is just... Like, we don't know why Ortegas is in a war, so she hates Dacre. And then she calls Dacre a walk. She calls Dacre a butcher, basically to his face. And then just gets away with it.
Wait, but wasn't she mad that he butchered his own people?
Dacre
butchered his own people.
Dacre had hypothetically murdered his senior officers to escape when the battle had ended.
I'm pretty sure we're all anti-butchery when it comes down to it, really.
Yeah.
But that's like, tell me this guy was a bad guy, but you've only got 2 minutes worth of screen time to do it in. And it's, I'm just going to do it. There are so many beats in this episode where you go, ooh, this could be, oh no, they've done something else.
Yeah!
You just keep going, that whole scene on the bridge. Easy. But in this, I think this is, everything that's wrong with Strange New Worlds as a series is that there are so many missed interesting opportunities because they're not afraid to show these people having depth. And the only person they give depth to in this episode, there's the person standing next to him who in the first episode of this season have this shared trauma from Jigal, and they just don't do anything with it. And it's so annoying.
It's astounding how little actually happens in this episode. Like, genuinely, always shocked me that nothing happens for 40 minutes. Like,
and yet they ruined Mbenga for me.
We're going to dig into that.
We'll dig it. I think we're going to go for that now, because Ortegas is racist and gets away with it. And then Spock burns Dacra's hand open. And then Dacra says this weird bit where he's like, ah, there is no Klingon culture. It's just war and ideology. And it's like...
Yeah, I thought they were going to take it to some weird, self-hate what was I going to say? Allegory?
Allegory.
Palagory, I'm tired, yeah. It's Friday.
But it's like, it's also like, are we going to get into why Dacra actually defected? Is it, no. No, of course not. He's just going to burn his hand. And then he's going to have to go to medical, and Mbenga's going to have a bit of PTSD, which, that's okay. I thought that was a good sequence.
Yeah, they hadn't made it, I don't know. It felt for him. It was sad. It was touching.
And then, you know, we get our first flashback to Space Bash, which would, you know, if they turned the lights on, would have been immediately better. That planet's really dark for some reason.
It's because it's war, John.
War is dark. Hell. I watched MASH with all the brightness turned down, and there was no laugh track.
Yeah, we were saying before we started that part of the joy of this series is basically big flashy lights, which keeps you distracted from actually caring about what's going on. So turning everything off kind of showed up all the deficiencies of the meat of the matter, and there's, again, missed opportunity. And Mbenga is clearly freaking out. And yet, what they then do to show why he's there in those next scenes is, yeah, it's him chilling out like Trapper John having a martini. It's, yeah. I really don't like this episode. And I know we're going to be going on about it for a while, but I just want to make that clear from the outset. It's, flashy lights aside, it is crap. It really is.
I mean, this is. I think, quite frankly, this first flashback sequence with Chapel coming in, landing, meeting Space Hawkeye, meeting Mbenga in the bathtub.
We got into it. We're going to get to Ron Howard in a moment, but who's Hawkeye? Who's Trapper?
Well, I think here's the point, which is that they don't care, because I think if anything, Martinez has a bit more Colonel Potter energy. Mbenga sitting in the bathtub not doing anything is proper Hawkeye energy.
Yeah, well, I can go along with that.
But it's that thing was quite clear. They want to give you that MASH vibe, but they keep cutting away from it. If they just focused really hard on war is war, hell is hell, they would have gotten more out of those flashbacks. I thought they were really good. The sequence where the transporters go off and they have to do all the casualties and they put the guy... into stasis, and it's like, oh, isn't war grim? And they're being shelled all the time, and isn't it miserable?
That poor little guy. I thought they were going to go much darker with his storyline, to be honest. I thought he was going to have a mental break and just sort of walk into the field. But
yeah, it's like,
they do the line as well about we've got no organ regenerator thing, and I'm thinking, you guys are mashing it. You've got a lot of dead people around you. There's a lot of organs you can be using right there. Like, I thought that's where they were going to go with it. Like, welcome, Nurse Chapel. Congratulations, you're promoted. We need his lungs.
I was going to say, isn't that unethical? But then I remember the MASH episode where they take out part of somebody's artery and give it to somebody else.
Yeah.
So it's not.
That episode.
That's a good Lifeline is an excellent episode of MASH. It is one of my favorites.
That's on our Patreon.
It is. It's a great episode of MASH. But they could have done that. I mean, we do get her doing the heart massage, which is also another MASH reference. But
yeah,
But they keep then we get the best, the bit of this episode that genuinely made me scream the first time I saw it, which is Pike goes to see Mbenga and tells Mbenga that there are orders from Starfleet that all Klingon war vets must interact with the Klingon ambassador, which is like,
what? That's what was happening there? Why? Why would we do that?
Because we want to traumatize our crews as much as possible.
So that's fine.
This is pre having counselors on board the on the ships, of course.
But also, like, here's the point. I genuinely think that, like, if it was, say, 1953, and you had a bunch of British Army of the Rhine guys, and so what we're doing, we got a dinner with a bunch of Bundeswehr guys, I'm fairly sure the colonel might go, if you don't want to be there, find an excuse not to be there.
I just don't see what the benefit is to putting a bunch of traumatized people in a room with someone who will trigger them and maybe ruining his day and everyone's day.
There is no good reason. Like, if anything, you've just increased the chance of a diplomatic incident more.
He's like, fuck you guys. And this paella, whatever the fuck it was supposed to be, is cold. Then what? He's back to being a war criminal.
I just hate this so much. When he says that, part of me goes, okay, so what they're trying to create the reconciliation scene, right? Where they can maybe, at the worst, go to Proto 10 forward, have a beer, and have it out. And that would be a better episode if Dahra and Mbenga are just basically sitting there with drinks, sorting themselves out. But they don't do that. Instead, they have cold jambalaya. Very stiff shots of whiskey, which I don't think they ever drink. They keep pouring whiskey, but I don't think anyone actually takes a sip in the episode. That's what I started watching, because I was just like, I'm not interested by the story. Are they actually drinking that?
They couldn't drink it in a dignified and traumatized manner as actors.
Shots. Yeah.
But then, like, we have this bit. The other weird bit is they keep going, oh, I don't want to do this, but we have to do it for Chris. It's like, no, you don't. Yeah, he gave Chris, you an out.
And you know what? Chris is being a little bitch. I'll say it, okay? Chris, you should have seen it. I think Kirk would not have let this happen. Kirk would have been like, you know what, guys? Take five. Who cares what those Starfleet admirals probably are saying? Take some time.
I was thinking about this. There isn't really another captain who would purposefully put his senior crew into a position where they would be traumatized, unless it was a sort of combat situation. I can't think of another episode where, Picard turns to somebody and says, right, you know that horrible thing you went through? We're now going to discuss it over spaghetti.
There is a bit where Troy gets forcibly impregnated and they just have a chat about it.
Huh? Sorry, I block out a lot of TNG.
Season 2, episode 1, The Child.
Yeah, but you see, the thing is, you got to remember, after Encounter at Farpoint, everybody blocks out all of TNG until the third season.
Yeah, that's fair enough. It just didn't happen, guys. But I think the thing that's different is I can see contrivance of the plot, meaning other characters have to do it. I mean, famously, of course, Star Trek 6, where they sit down and have the compare the Klingons to Hitler art conversation. You never have had people going, oh, we have to do this for Kirk. It's like, oh, there's a higher principle here. Like, doing it for Chris. Doing it for the Federation, sure. But doing it for Chris, like,
And at least in Star Trek 6, you've got the guy whose kid literally murderized by a Klingon. And he's the one going, I will be there, I will be doing this. Whereas Pike, who missed the war, is now saying to a bunch of traumatized war vets, come on, guys, let's break bread with the enemy.
They never engage with that. We never have Ortega's turn around to Pike and go, you can't ask him to do this because you weren't there.
Yeah. That would have made the episode infinitely better.
Also, what is Pike's history before this? Why does he seem so detached from the idea that someone could be so traumatized by this thing? interaction.
You'd think because someone who knows he's going to get melted would have a little bit more empathy.
Yeah, fucking exactly.
I'm not going to die now, but you guys might. So, yeah, that's...
But it's also like, Pike, what would Pike know about being forced into dirty situations? I don't know, that time he was in a cage, in the cage, and the aliens wanted to him, were trying to force him to have sex with a lady.
Bastards. Utter bastards.
Gene's vision.
But like, but it's also like, he shouldn't like, they shouldn't be, he shouldn't be just, everyone just rolls along with it.
I'm going to bring up writing here because it's either very lazy or this was the one that, this is the ship in the bottle episode, the classic TNG thing where they've run out of money and they have to come up with an idea just to keep everybody on sets they've already built. This episode feels a lot like that, that they blew the budget on the new starship at the beginning, the Kelsey May. And then they're suddenly like, oh crap, we've got this big set piece on Jigal. Everything else has to be like two spotlights, one camera, and one sound guy who's, you know, not on overtime. That's kind of what this episode feels like.
Yeah, they blew everything on the Jigal flashbacks, mm-hmm. but they could have. There's an episode of Enterprise, and hear me out here, guys, called First Flight. Where Archer and Trip fight, Archer finds out that his best friend A.G. Robinson was killed in a climbing accident. And the whole episode is just a flashback about Archer and Robinson being the first people doing the right stuff, basically. Test pilots, jockeys, go behind the rules to break the rules.
Yeah.
And it's First Flight, it's a really good, bittersweet episode about, yeah, this it's proper what people thought Enterprise is going to be. The right stuff in space. And if they'd just gone, okay, they do the right stuff.
They do an episode to remind everybody what they wanted and then go, you're not getting any more of that, people.
Yeah. That's just peak Star Trek in many ways. But they should have, that's what this looks like. You've got this great Jigal setting. You could do MASH. You can have the choppers come in. You can have, you know, Mabenga and Chapel maybe have the Hawkeye breakdown. Like, we can't just do this forever. Is this going to end? And you have your goodbye, farewell, and amen moment at the end. And that's it. And you make the episode about the war. But they're so determined to do this Klingon diplomat man of peace thing that doesn't really work. We keep cutting back from a plot where nothing happens to Jigal, which is vaguely interesting.
There's no threat on Jigal.
Yeah.
There's threat to other people, but there's, you know, the fabulous Clint Howard goes, oh yeah, she goes, oh, there's incoming fire, and he's like, yeah, they sort out our sensors scrambling and they hit us from time to time. And you're thinking, okay, that could be cool. Nothing ever happens with that again. In the background, there's all like tracer fire,
but it's just in the background.
Yeah, and it's like there's people coming in hurt. And that's when you're going, okay, this is going to be a MASH war is hell episode. But I'm going to go back to the first episode of season two here, where Mbeng is patching up the Klingon, and he says to him, you know, oh, you know, how do you know Klingon physiology? So I was on Jigal. He said, if you were on Jigal, you'd be dead. And then there's the line, which I've written down, right? Because this is just how I'm going to geek out
it
here.
I'm deeply offended you are by it.
When he says, you know, if you were on Jigal, you'd be dead. And he says, at the Battle of Chakar, so much blood was in the air. When it rained, it was red. Right? And the guy looks him in the eye, and there's a connection. Of that, two people who were at a bad thing are like, okay, staunch. Right? There's that.
Yeah.
So we finally get to Jigal, and none of that happens. Which makes all of that completely moot, and us going... What? Hey,
you know what? You know, there's a, not to go on the MASH train again, but we're on the MASH train. There's an episode, there's a two-part episode of MASH called Bug Out, where the UN line gets broken through and the communists are coming and they have to bug out of the MASH unit. And there's a great bit in it where Hawkeye and Radar are walking down the road and a Jeep pulls up with a bunch of guys in it. And Hawk, they're like, what the hell are you still doing here? The up front people are like, yeah, yeah, we know. And they go, where's the front? And the guy looks at them, looks forward and goes, you're standing on it. If they'd done that, where like, they basically, they're under attack. And it's like, we've got to get the patients out. And then suddenly there's this Klingons coming over the hill. And you put stakes in it. You make that the climax of the episode. They said the front. Then you get something more visceral for why Mbenga hates Dacra more than, oh, he's this guy he tried to kill Spec Ops style. It's like, no, he led an attack that genuinely we saw kill his friends.
And that's it, because they set up early that there's a clock ticking, because they're saying the fleet's warping in or the transports are coming and they're going to get us out. So, you know, get everybody to the choppers is essentially what they're saying. Again, there's not that sort of, we've got to keep going until they arrive. We've got to keep these people alive until they arrive. You know, there's none of that. There's no urgency to it. There's just
in this episode at all.
No.
Because you know what would have... So there's a bit later on. So we do these flashbacks. We have this terrible dinner.
We're still in the recap of the episode. Sorry, okay. Dear listener.
No, it's fine.
We're all over the place on this.
This podcast has no plan. It's fine. But we do the whole dinner. We have Spock and Chapel have relationship issues. I'm not going to talk about that. I hate that. We're going to do that later.
They're so boring together.
There's this bit where essentially Pike tells number one that, oh, we're going to have to cut through a nebula to get to Starbase 12 because all people, there's been Starfleet doesn't like all the bad press they're getting. It's like, that's not a threat. You know how I would have, there's one thing I'd have changed to make this episode better. Keep all the plot elements and one thing. The Klingons want Dacra back and they're tailing Enterprise. And that's a tension. Immediately there's a, there's a ticking clock of we kind of have to decide whether or not we're giving him to the Klingons. And that will determine. Mbenga's
going to airlock him out to the Klingons.
Yeah, that's the question.
So the thing that this episode reminded me of was The Defector, which I think is Ron Moore's first solo episode.
And it's John Le Carre could have written that.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's twists and turns. It is literally, again, it's a ship. They blew the budget on the two Romulan warbirds shooting at each other at the beginning. And it all happens in about two locations on the Enterprise. But basically, you've got a Romulan defector, and they're having to figure out who he is, what he's up to. Is this a double bluff sort of thing, right? And it's fantastic because it's just like high tension. Basically, Ron Moore then rips that episode off for most of Battlestar Galactica, if we're fair. It's that same sort of theme of there has to be something. There's tick, 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 tick. 33, for example. You know, it's that.
Oh, it's a...
Yeah.
Ron Moore is a... I don't know how much of For All Mankind you've watched, but Ron Moore is just this absolute master of every time something happens, the tension just goes up and up.
I haven't started it yet. I'm saving it.
It's so good.
There's a couple of things they could do. They could do something like that. They basically make Dacra, whatever his name is, make him interesting. Yeah, that would be good. Or have him as the MacGuffin, right? Don't show him at all. That would have been interesting. That he's just this presence on the ship. And you see the effect of him just being there, having on...
And then maybe you have him in the final sequence. Maybe the whole crux of the episode is that the Klingons are like, oh, but we know your ship's doctor saw Dacra kill his men. And Pike's like, to Mbenga, the Klingons say this, will you testify that? And Mbenga hasn't made his mind up. And that we reintroduced the Dacra going to essentially plead for his life with Mbenga.
Or... And Mbenga, as it's all falling around, saves a Klingon.
Yeah.
And at the final bit, when he works up the courage to go see him off the ship, they turn around. It's the guy he saved. So Mbenga's responsible for the massacre on Jigal. Boom.
Right? Yeah, it's
that's bad Trek writing 101 right there. You know, he did a selfless act, and the selfless act has bit him in the ass, and now he has to grow from it. And yeah, do something like that, because that's...
You know what we get instead? We get the weird sparring sequence where Dacra's like, oh, I want you to come and join me as a fellow diplomat.
Join me as a dynamic duo.
Yeah, Batman and Robin, but, you know, Kissinger.
Or at least have them both know what happens. So all the scenes with them are them trying to, you know,
figure it out.
Yeah, maneuver around it. But it's just not that smart. And
there's a whole very cliched bit with the ensign who's like, I don't know why we're doing this. We have to do it for freedom. And then he goes and dies anyway. And I just, here's the point. You either would commit to having that be a really important part of the plot, or you just don't do it. Like, those are your choices. And it's like, Ensign Jimmy's going to, the moment Babenga's like, oh, we have to fight to save our friends, you know Ensign Jimmy's going to die. I don't know his fucking name, but he's going to die the moment he says that. We get that, and we get this.
He's actually wearing red, isn't he, as well?
Like, yeah, he's in red. But it's like, this episode, and then we've got fucking Andorian David Sterling. Fucking, like, this hard-ass Black Ops guy with a scar that looks like it was drawn on by a pen. Who wants to get hands on, he wants his hand on fucking, you know, Mbenga's special space Perverton so he could get his guys hooked on fucking meth and go kill a bunch of Klingons, which, like.
Is this the sexy Andorian?
Is he sexy? Hillary?
John, listen, his cheekbones were chiseled by the gods themselves. What am I supposed to do?
They literally were chiseled by a prosthetics artist, so go on.
Yes, we've reached the second beer stage of this podcast, ladies and gentlemen. So,
yeah,
there we go.
I just support all Andorians, and I wouldn't apologize for that.
Also, like, and then it's like, oh yeah, Mbenga was just a fucking special ops officer called the Ghost. It's like, what the fuck?
Why does everyone have to be a badass, right? I just want to see, you know, Ensign Jimmy, who's reasonably crap, but good enough to, you know, keep on the promotion roster, right? Yeah, and have him do something and excel at, right? I don't want quiet, mild-mannered doctor by day, ninja by night. Just let him be a doctor. Yeah, I don't kill people, Jim. I heal them. You know, all of that business. It's this is a guy who kept his daughter alive in a transporter forever. This whole thing of, you know, I'm trying to be better. Oh, piss off. Just be one or the other, right? And okay, where does he have the time to go to medical school, become spec ops, and then still reach the rank of commander?
Right? Yeah, but you can do anything through the power of gene.
Or Benzedrine. If you're on enough Benzedrine, you can do anything.
Yes, including in the case of, you know, many a German tank commander, be the only one who survives and somehow you become a hero. So
it's all right. If you take an offense dream, maybe you too can show the officers of Royal Hussars how they actually lost in Normandy. That's a reference for exactly four people who listen to this podcast.
And I one of them's Normandy on the podcast.
I blacked out.
Yeah. What? You just black out when you did this fugue state.
When I hear Normandy.
Yeah, that's fine.
Out of respect. But it is like
he doesn't act. Why does he need to be a warrior? And I'm going to make a call out to every Trek, every person who replied to my fucking review complaining about my view on this. But why do we need to be a warrior? Why are we like, why must he be a fighter? And also, why is everybody so happy with making the only black man on this cast violent to a point of near, like, animalism and describe such?
Speak on it. Because I was so upset that why they are just we just ruined like, him for me.
Why are we like, actually, no, there's a, we, why are we like, oh, this really gentle father and healer and gentle old, you know, father figure in many senses. Oh, he's actually capable of vicious, violent murder if you put enough pills in him.
Had he not been through enough with his little daughter? Had he not had enough trauma to be an interesting character? Why does he have to be a war criminal slash murderer as well?
Because I liked your idea, Matt, that like the twist is that he'd saved some Klingons, like he'd saved the Klingon's life and that Klingon then committed the massacre.
That's Gene's vision right there. That's being better. And there's, you know, there's, I've read so many random blogs about this episode. I've weaned myself off of reading other people's opinions of TV shows. I just keep it to circles of friends like this. And randomly when I Google and find crap John's written.
You, Olivia, the 800,000 people who will on average listen to this podcast.
Yeah, but you look at it, and where Olivia's saying, this is what I want to dig into. You said he's ruined the character. Now, the one thing that this episode could have done is given him more. Because I've always thought he's interesting, but he's underwritten. And they've written him up by making him a war criminal. Well, is he? He kills three guys, right? That we know of in this. And all those guys.
What happens after this? What's going on there?
You see,
his recreational murder.
I was so checked out by that point that, you know, it's. And, but oh, come on. Dear Paramount people who clearly listen to this podcast, why hide it? Right? Why give it that, did he or didn't he? Just have him stab him in the chest, right? If that's the road you're going to, just bloody kill him, right? Or don't. Have the Klingon frame him, right? Do something interesting with it, right?
You know what I said? I make one change. Keep everything about this episode the same until then. Show them fighting. The beggar stabs him. He collapses. Chapel comes and sees them, and they just pick him up and they put him on the bio bed and they try and save his life. And you know, in Star Trek VI, there's a famous sequence where Gorkon's been shot and McCoy's trying to save his life, and McCoy just climbs on top of his body and tries to shock his heart back in. Do that. Have that exact moment of they're trying to get his heart starting.
Because he says something to Kirk, doesn't he, that sort of
Don't let peace die with me.
Yeah.
Let it end here.
So the death has a meaning.
Yeah, but also, he dies. Dacre dies. Is please don't let peace die with me. All this, and then basically have Pike heavily go basically because he's dead. All of the negotiations we've had with the Klingons have collapsed, and it's likely that all the peace agreements he set up will collapse soon too. And that we're probably going to be stuck in a cyclone conflict with the Klingons for a long time. And you have this mirror of this death mirroring with Gorkon's death in Star Trek VI, in that this Klingon Cold War arc starts and ends in the same place of a man being killed, of a peacemaker being killed, in air quotes. But all you don't even have to do that. You just have to have him get stabbed and then Babenga basically desperately trying to save his life.
Okay, sorry. Paramount people, can we let John write just one episode? Just one episode.
Please, let me write. Just one. Let me write a fucking
book. I'd like
book.
To see it. I think a lot of us would like to see it.
Yeah, I'd all for that as long as I get to sort of proof the draft.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean,
I can get on board with you there. And I like how this conversation is basically just us binning the episode because it's crap and saying how we'd make it better, which is fun. But I still think they don't do anything with Dacre that makes his death anything. All they do is basically say, oh, he was a coward, and then they kill the coward. And he's a coward because he ran?
A coward because he ran and refused. He ran from consequences. Yeah, so we're just going to let him die. And that's... Yeah.
Somehow. At what point did he run? Did he had enough of the conflict in a moral sense?
No,
he ran because Babenga was coming. He ran because Babenga was coming to kill him.
Yeah, okay, so cool. The low rent fight scene, which is clearly when they were running out of budget, because it's literally like in a black curtain and like, oh, oh, and then somebody gets stabbed in the head. I'm guessing at that point, if there was the budget, you would have seen him sneaking out the back going, I'm out. But you don't. He just, you know, he says I ran from it, and that's it. So basically he turns himself in. Now, the other thing that's not clear, if he's been slaughtering everybody on Jagal, which is in keeping with the war themes for this particular war, which is the Remain Klingon thing that, you know, that whole other series was about, that's completely within keeping with what they were doing. It's not a war of conquest. It's funny enough, I was just listening to this book that was discussing this. It's not a war of conquest. It's a war of ideology.
There Tell me about it. What was the name of this book you've been reading?
It's this thing I found online by Seamus Devonish. It's, well, he's reading it, and it's really good. Van Doren, some bloke. Go that look him up.
This is my bookshelf.
Yeah, you want to go, Olivia, have you heard of a book like this?
I've heard of a book like this, John.
It's this thing by this coward who wouldn't put his name on the cover himself.
For legal reasons.
For legal reasons, yeah. It's called The Edge of Midnight.
The Edge of Midnight.
And, and with the most interesting AI voice. But this is the thing that takes us back to the jambalaya scene, is, again, Ortega's gets, in every episode, she gets about 90 seconds of being kind of cool. So when she's flipping out and going, you know, remain Klingon, boom, all your friends are dead. Remain Klingon, boom, all your friends are dead. You're like, shit.
That's really good.
Yeah.
And it's the way that Melissa Navia delivers it with just such a little like emotion. Like she's just trying to goad. Because it's not really, she's just trying to goad him into replying or defending it. She doesn't.
And poor Uhura going, I can translate that. Doesn't it mean this? And it's like, yeah, it does.
Welcome, such a pure heart in this episode.
Well, welcome to the party, pal. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that's a really good. But you're like, it's like 90 seconds and that's great. And then the whole thing is just kind of falls apart after that.
I want to like this show. And there's bits of it that the first season I thought it was going, okay, great. So we've done the Kirk and Spock thing. Now we get to spend time with everybody else, right? We don't, right? It's not Kirk and Spock, Pike and Spock you've got Chapel, who was the rando showing up because, hey, this is my wife while I'm off cheating with all these other people. I'm going to give her some acting to do, right? Which is essentially Gene Roddenberry's getting...
It's Gene Roddenberry saying, I'm sorry the studio thought you were too... This is a direct quote from the studio notes. Too mannish to be a main character.
Yeah. Who did he say that about?
That was the studio note about number one in the cage. Was that you can't? She's too mannish to be a woman on the bridge. Even though the whole pitch for number one was, she's not like other women. She's professional.
She's number one.
Oh my God, wow! Feminism. 1964.
1964. What a concept.
Yeah, you can have a Russian and a Japanese on the bridge, but you can't have a woman.
Do you know my favorite Gene Roddenberry fact ever was there was a cast party at Gene's house, and Gene was in the pool with George Takei. And Takei's like, you know, I know we're doing some really good work with Sheldon Coles and having Chekhov on and having me on, obviously. It'd be really great if, you know, we could talk about gay rights and, you know, have gay characters. Because Gene knew he was gay and Gene didn't give a shit. But Gene then basically goes, yeah, I've already had enough trouble with the studio for Uhura, so I don't think we could do that. And then Gene literally just swims off.
Like this sounds like one of my fake scenarios that I write on Twitter, my Gene tales.
He said it and just pushed off from the side of the pool and left George to kind of be like, well, fuck you then.
Jesus.
And you know, to be fair, they do a pretty good job. Whenever I think Sulu, I just think oiled up Sulu. That's the first image that comes to my head when I think Sulu in... the two things that remind me is Scotty with a claymore and Sulu oiled up with about 20 bottles of Johnson's just poured all over him in it.
It's great.
What about the oiled up Mbenga scene in this episode? He's having a little bit of a breakdown, but it's kind of sexy.
dude's cut. Yeah. Fair
play. I'll say this. I saw him during the BFI Film Festival. I saw him on Waterloo Bridge, and fuck me, man.
I'm still mad at you.
I didn't realize it was him. He got
you.
Like, oh,
chase him down. If anyone looks a bit like that man, even by 5%, you chase them down.
I'm not kidnapping Bamsa Walshkin for you.
You should have taken one for the team, taken that kidnapping charge.
I'm all for that. I'm a happily married cis white guy, but I can appreciate a good looking man, and he is one. And I was in Stockholm, and Alexander Skarsgård walked past the bar we were in, and literally every guy in that bar went, "Oh." And we all felt a little bit less of a man.
Yeah, and fair enough.
When he went past.
And yet, you know, somehow more free.
Yeah, you're like, those people exist, and it's not just the movies. Yeah, but the thing what I was saying is that I want to like this show. It's kind of because of the Mbega character, the Ortegas. It's basically all the people who we don't know what happens to them, the new
people.
And they're not investing in them. I think there are moments when Jess Bush does interesting things with Chapel, and then for 97% of the rest of the time, it's she's the blonde bit of stuff that Spock's experimenting on. And you just think, really? Is that it?
That's all you have to talk about with Chapel, who is explicitly described in the original series as, you know, having joined having stayed in Starfleet to find her husband, Roger Corby, which still associates a character around a man, but they haven't touched that. More importantly, she's introduced in Season 1 of Strange New Worlds as a pioneering doctor from, like, I'm looking this up because I forgot this. Prestigious
medical institution.
Really, really prestigious.
But they do call her a doctor at one point, don't they?
No, she's not a doctor yet. She's not yet. She becomes a doctor. She does a medical degree between TOS and the motion picture. But she's at Stanford Morehouse. She's gone from Stanford to the Enterprise.
By way of a combat internship?
Yeah, it's very unclear
When she learned to fight as well, does that green benzes that they inject also inject, you know, you now know Kung Fu. Yeah, because in that episode there, she's kicking ass as well. But in this one, she's not. She's literally goading her fellow doctor into going full Arnie.
Yeah.
Because that's all she does in this episode is, oh, you have to go kill him. Look at all these people that have died. You have to go bring back, you know, basically bring back his head on a plate for me. That's her only purpose in this entire episode. That's
also really, really weird. Like, why is she just so much character assassination of Chapel in season 2 of Enterprise, of this show? Like,
I almost don't want this on the record, but I found her character very uninspiring in this show, in this series.
No.
I totally took away her spark. I'm so sorry.
No, like, there's in season 1 of Strange World, there's an absolute mischief of spark to Chapel. Like, it's a little bit of her in Strange World where it's like the bit where she just, there's a certain like mischief to her. Also, she's an independent character in season 1 of Strange World. She does things that don't involve Spock.
Yeah, the Spock thing just makes them both boring.
It does.
Yeah. For me, the thing is, it's, you know, it's the excuse is there's isn't a line that says, you know, that he in his younger years he experimented with his feelings, that's why he wanted to get rid of them and all that. And they're basically saying here that at this point in Spock's life, he's sowing his Vulcan oats, which is the only thing that this serves a purpose for, is making the T'Pol you have to fight Kirk thing in the original series make sense. Right, because she's basically be going, that makes that whole scene with she makes Spock and Kirk fight, and if whatever she gets a divorce, basically that's, we now know that's because, okay, Spock, you were knocking off the Aussie nurse, she is an Aussie nurse, isn't she? Yeah, I'm getting my revenge now 20 years later. But you've got to kill your best mate or die trying, sort of thing. But it just you can do
it. Adds nothing. Actually, her going out with Spock adds nothing to either character.
That's me projecting, trying to make it make sense.
I feel like they just took away a lot of what I expected them to build upon for Chapel's character, to be fair. I don't know. Also, her appearance. Why doesn't she have her lovely dramatic hairstyles? When does that happen?
I mean, there's the other main problem, of course, is this show doesn't look like it was filmed. This show does not look like it's in the 60s enough.
Oh, well, like, no one has ever been able to capture the majesty of the original series, okay?
DS9 did.
DS9 did, but like...
Trials and Tribulations was, I thought, a perfect homage. And I kind of wish they'd left it at that and never went back.
I'm very much of the opinion that, like, updating it visually was a good idea, because, let's face it, it does look a bit... It wouldn't... The styling of the TOS sets would not survive a cinema-level camera they're filming it with. But I also remain visually, continually upset that they're not wearing flared bell-bottom trousers.
Yeah. The sartorial choices in this are terrible.
Yeah, like, your choices are fabulous bell-bottom trousers and boots, or tights. And they went with tights.
Damn it.
Like, there is a reason that people admit it, that people in service, serve in the services of all kinds, whether you're talking anything from the fire brigade to the army, don't wear fucking tights.
They don't want to be bad bitches. Is that why, John?
They may be on the weekend, John. They may do on the weekend.
It is a British army. If it's a British army, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
But they don't.
More than just tights.
Yeah. But also, like, I don't. It doesn't look good. It doesn't feel very 60s. And also, it's this kind of thing where, like, it just... They could make everything a lot more 60s. The haircut could be more 60s. The clothes could be more 60s.
It could feel what they need to do before they sort of decide the aesthetic of every episode? They need to listen to Spock sing Maiden Wine in that one episode of TOS, okay? And that's the level of campness that they need to aspire to. They're not going to reach it. They're not going to reach it, but they need to aspire to that level of
campness. This episode isn't camp enough. MASH got to be camp.
Well, at least be MASH.
Yeah. Yeah, this I think the MASH thing is right, because the film goes from high camp to high drama on a knife's edge.
Yeah.
Right. So you've got my favorite section in the movie is Hawkeye and Trapper go to Japan to play golf, and while they're there, they're going to save a general's son.
Yeah.
And they come back, and literally as they arrive, they go straight into the operating theater because there's been an attack. And the shot is the camera pans down as they're literally elbows deep in a guy, and they're still wearing the golfing outfits underneath the smocks, right?
Yeah.
That scene hits hard because it's jolly, but these guys know what they're doing. In this, which they've been, and to be fair, the TV series does that a lot as well. There's an episode, I can't remember the name of it, when a reporter comes and he's Hawkeye's friend, and he's writing
Sometimes You Hear the Bullet.
Yes, that one, right?
That's the other one we watched, Olivia. Mm-hmm. The one where the guy dies at the operating table.
Oh, damn it. Why did you make me watch these depressing fucking episodes?
Because Sometimes You Hear the Bullet is one of the greatest half hours of drama ever mm-hmm. written.
And in it, again, it's... When they're together, they're having a laugh. It's a joke. And then it switches. And then there's that line where he says, I heard the bullet coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you just go, oh, it, yeah. It's one of those things that shouldn't really work, but it just literally drags you back down. And you realize that this isn't just a comedy show. Now in here, he says, pointing in Strange New Worlds episode, whatever this is, there's none of that. Because by the end of it, I actually don't care about the character's trauma because I don't believe it. And I feel terrible for saying that because I think, the actor and beggars, his real name.
Absolution.
Yes. He does so much good work in this show with not a lot really to hang anything on. And this episode should have been it for him. And I'm sure when the script came, he must have thought, oh, okay, here we go. And it fails him. It fails. Okay, you get TV series for the time they're in. And you guys were saying on a few weeks ago, talking about Enterprise being the 9/11 season, the 9/11 show, which it is. Battlestar is, you know, War on Terror turned up to 11. And then the Star Trek that's come since, the movies, which were just fan service wankathons.
Hey, Beyond is good.
Beyond is just an extra long. It's a two part. It's just a two part episode, isn't it?
I like
it. It's great fun.
It was shiny. Yeah.
It is shiny.
Beyond is the best of the three.
Yeah. And then you sort of get what we have now, which is sort of post war on terror stuff. But the thing is, we have a generation of people who will be watching this episode with similar trauma.
Yeah.
And what they will be watching this show for, and this show has been teasing for, by this point, 18 episodes, that this will be addressed. And they don't. They trivialize it. And that makes, you know, for all the things that we could do to this episode to make it better, more enjoyable as entertainment, the crux of this episode is they sell out on showing the trauma of combat survivors. They bring it up as a plot device again and again and again.
But they don't respect it.
No, they don't.
The plot...
It's a toy.
The plot has these war survivors being forced to confront their trauma again and again and again, not in a deconstructed, not productive way, and presents that as the thing they have to do for the sake of the cause. Like the bit where Rebenga goes, oh, maybe we could just pretend we didn't all fight in a war, and that it doesn't work. And it's not really interrogated.
There's the cop-outs in this entire season, to be fair. It's okay, we're gonna do this. Battlestar Galactica, and this is Ron Moore again, right?
Hell yeah.
Ron Moore who saves the Next Generation and then gives us some of the best Trek ever written, is given a decent budget and free reign. And how he gets the new Caprica episodes through corporate, I have no idea.
Yeah, he just basically went, oh, I'm making your main characters into suicide terrorists. Bombers and terrorists. Yeah.
Right. And I remember at the time, because he used to do the podcast that came out with each one that then became the audio commentaries. And I remember the first episode with the suicide bombers, which I can't remember the title of, he said on that, it's going to get worse. We're not pulling back from this because we have to investigate what we're seeing on the news. Now, fast forward to now and this show, when you have essentially two generations of young people who have been in the sandbox for a period of time that they should never have ever have been in. And you now have an opportunity for them to look to a better future that Star Trek is supposed to give us. And they're not being rewarded for that service, for that trauma, because they're seeing characters like this not being able to deal. And it makes me really, really cross.
Also, the other thing that always strikes me about Season 2 of Strange New Worlds, this is all filmed in the spring and summer of 2022. What happened to February of 2022 that is living in everyone's heads? And would be a massive thing to consider when you're writing about war.
Oh, you mean the war that's not on the news anymore? That one. Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Remember the war in Europe, Olivia? Yeah.
Oh. MTF.
remember that invasion?
It's all fine now, right? It's resolved.
Yeah, it's not on the telly, so it must be fine. They're in hiatus. They're waiting for their pickup for season three.
Yeah, that's the thing, is you've got this whole war is in people's minds. You know, this is also presumably being written in the run-up after the final withdrawal from Afghanistan as well. The idea of what war means and what it means to fight a war that does felt pointless as well. How do you not address that? It's 2022. There is a conversation to be had about the experience of those who fought in the War of Terror and have come home and realized that it was kind of, they might not have actually achieved anything. There's a conversation about that this show just has not engaged with.
But they have set it up. You know, they've talked about 100 million people dying in 15 months during the
which is an insane figure. Depending on how you understand the war, it's either far too high or far too low.
Yeah, and you think, okay, again, they're seeding all this stuff, and then when it gets to the payoff, they fumble the ball, or something. Let's be generous here. Maybe there's a level of corporate that's stopping them from going there. And you know, that's me being very generous to people who probably have a lot of love for this, but fight for it. You know, I know we're being like serious Trek fans here, just going, come on, show your passion. But you know, reality, I would kill to see the original treatment. Kill, that's probably the bad thing to say when we're talking about war trauma. I would love to see
Go Mbengo on their ass.
The original treatment for this cannot have been this, because how the hell do you get, well, to be fair, it's American telly, a lot of bad writers get lots of jobs. And solidarity for them all now coming back off strike, of course, but I hope something stopped this from being better, and this was just not the best that they could do with this subject matter.
This can't have been the best they could do.
They're giving them too much credit.
Yeah. I'm trying to be nice. I'm a beer and a half in, so I've got the buzz, and I'm trying to be nice. I'm going to get really surly in a minute as well, and yeah, that's when the F-bomb will probably get dropped.
You know what the worst part of this episode is, I think? It's a bit at the end where Pike goes, so we sent a report off that says, you didn't kill him, we promise. And are you sure you don't want to change it? If you did kill him, and we could do something, we could arrange a cover-up if you did kill him, Joe.
Yeah.
And Mbengo goes, no, you don't have to arrange a cover-up, because, you know, maybe he deserved to die. And we just leave it at that.
What the fuck is that? No, seriously, that really... What a disturbing ending. That's just like, if you killed a guy, I guess that's fine because we're besties. And it's just not interrogated in any way.
Pike just literally offers to arrange a cover up for it.
Now, if he said, I put you into this situation, I can get you out of it. By my decisions, I've forced you into a place where you've literally broken bad and maybe, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, stabbed a guy in the chest, right? But no, there's none of that. It's, we've done an investigation. It's inconclusive. How do you want us to spin the inconclusiveness? And you're just like, come on, where's your balls, Pike? You know, at least...
Pike has no guts in this show.
He's like a ghost of a man. What happened to him before this? I don't think I watched the previous episode. What happened to him?
Well, the previous episode. Okay, so this is where people online, those people, us, are complaining, because the previous episode is those old scientists, right? So yeah. It's Lower Decks crossover. People say the tonal shift between this to this episode and then onto the karaoke episode.
And then the musical.
It's too much. And you're like, didn't you watch the original series? That was messed up. They'd be going from tribbles to, I don't know, aliens up somebody's ass. It was, yeah, there wasn't a lot of thought really going into tonal shifts. And for me, if they'd investigated trauma going from something silly to snapping into a real world situation where people are going from seemingly okay to not okay at all, that's something that could be investigated, because it's not a thing where you're like, oh, how you feeling? I'm having a bad day today. I'm remembering some things. That's not how it works. It's always there. Mm-hmm. And in a way, they kind of do that in this episode with Mbenga. Chapel is terrible ups and downs there. That's very much, well, she's a woman. She can be a bit sort of up and then a bit down because she's a woman. Whereas Joe has to be sad and trying to hold it together the whole time. He has to be stoic, where she can be, you know, make it a double for me. So yes, deal differently, but don't be a caricature of it, and it's
such a fucking mess. It's just such a fucking mess.
Well, and it's just like, how dare you make me watch this episode on my way home on a Friday? I was watching this on the train, John.
Oh, you're that people fresh to this.
People saw me watching Star Trek, and even that alone is unforgivable.
Should we move on? You know what? I was about to say, let's move on to the trivia, but there's no trivia.
There's no trivia in modern Star Trek episodes, are there? They're not interesting.
There's no trivia in for any of these, because you know what? There's Clint Howard, who...
Yeah, let's talk about Clint. Clint's always good.
Clint's great. Martinez, 56-year gap between his first appearance on Star Trek and his newest one. That's pretty cool.
And he still looks as scary as he did in his first appearance.
He just, you know what? The best part is that Clint, you know who Clint Howard's brother is, Olivia?
No.
Ron Howard, creator of Arrested Development.
Ew.
Yeah. That's just like one of the weirdest things.
And Clint managed to stay.
I think I knew that he created Arrested Development.
Oh, yeah. But the thing is, there are times when he will randomly appear in shows that Ron Howard was doing so he could. Clint could keep his SAG card if he wasn't getting work. It was literally like, oh, we're doing a thing, come on. And he'd show up and go, hi. There you go. Tick, your medical insurance is good for another year.
Isn't he even in like Arrested Development briefly?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in it. I didn't realize that's why.
Oh, yeah.
His whole fucking family's in it now I think about it.
Well, isn't the episode when they go to Imagine and he's got like the Apollo 13 landing capsule in his office and it's just literally like his wife on the desk and things. It's just, I like that show.
Yeah.
And I like but
there's nothing else going on. There's no other, like, I swear to God, when the NDA is finally on Smile, we're going to get so much shit about this generation of Star Trek.
There's a thing that I just want to, my pitch to you, John, for this was, why not just make it that they hear that Martinez had died? You know, and the whole episode is flashback to Chapel and Benga and Martinez running a mash at Jagal while they're being overrun. And they're just trading warsers.
Obviously, that would have made too much sense.
I'm sure the budget would be cheaper because you wouldn't have had to do the bad dreads.
Those bad dreads, they were from Poundland. They weren't doing anything for the budget. Don't you worry.
Yeah, let me get a picture of this. Let me see these again.
They just weren't.
Oh, wow.
They weren't giving.
They look like they were pasted on the side of his head.
Yeah, they look like they're falling off on his little balls cap. Texture's all wrong, guys. It's okay. I'll forgive you because it's probably the same team that gave Michael Burnham braids. I don't know. Is it the same guys?
Michael Burnham's braids were okay, though, weren't they?
Yeah, they were good. That's why I forgive them. They have some leeway for a while.
For now. But then, yeah, there's no other trivia, so I guess we'll move on to, are we quitting? Yes. Next.
Yes.
Yes. God, I don't think we can actually... Yeah, that's in capitals.
If we'd done this the week that this was released, I probably would have said no. Because there's another one next week and it's going to be better. And the one next week was even worse. So, yes.
Anyway, this is, I will now, for everybody still listening, I'm now going to spoil that our 100th episode, which is our next episode, will be, what will it be, Olivia? Tell the people what we're doing our 100th episode on.
What are we doing in our 100th episode? What is we doing?
How have you forgotten? I'm leaving.
Are we doing the Picard? Like,
yes!
Review.
We're doing Picard season 3.
Okay, well, we're cutting that part out. We are.
No, the fuck we are.
We are doing the Picard review.
We're doing Picard season 3. So if you're listening to this, please at us, email us, throw bricks through our windows, and give us your one sentence of views of Picard season 3 to read out.
I feel a deep sense of like trepidation because I didn't really process the fact that I'm going to have to think about Picard, possibly watch Picard again.
Yeah.
Why would you do this to me, John? It's the 100th episode. How dare you?
It's a milestone. He's going to bring you back down to Earth.
Yeah. But it's okay because my plan for that is we'll do 5 episodes where we get our favorite, we get people back on to talk about good Star Trek. So, yeah. Please send us your thoughts. But until then, we have to do the important bit of the episode. What is the most important bit of an I Quit Star Trek episode, Olivia?
It's the moment where we have some real truths. The moment where we can all reconcile with the one truth, which is my truth. And that is
Before that. The bit
God
before.
Damn it.
The other bit, Olivia. What's the other bit, Olivia?
We're gonna do the tripnip scale, which is secondary to what I was just about to introduce. And we're gonna keep that in, because that was a beautiful introduction to what would have been the high art list.
But Olivia, could you please explain the tripnip list to Matt, who, despite listening to this podcast regularly, doesn't understand it.
Single time I listen to this and it gets to this bit, I'm like, I still don't get it.
It's probably because your brain blocks out any Enterprise content, which is valid. So the tripnip scale is based on the Enterprise episode Unexpected, in which Trip Tucker gains new nipples because he's with child. He's pregnant and he didn't know about it. It's really all above board and great.
Second episode of Enterprise, sexual assault. Bam, 100%. Right out the door. Emperor. But it's like you're watching an anime.
The noddies were a strange time. They really were.
Listen, it's Berman's vision, and you know, what can we do about it?
But it did give us tripnips, and the tripnip scale is our scale of episode cursedness, derangedness, utter weirdness. You know, high tripnip scores are given to episodes like A Night in Sick Bay. The Gamesness of Triskelion. Angel One. Obviously.
Angel One. I mean, obviously, you're going to have a lot of notes for Angel One.
Justice, which is the one with all the naked blonde supermen who try to kill Wesley.
I actually take offense to that. That's a high art episode.
What else could. Yeah, but that's the sort of. We want to. Out of 10 tripnips, what is your rating of derangement and tell us why? So I'll kick us off. I'm going to give this episode a 4 because it's just bad. It's not deranged. And two of those are just Robert Wisdom's terrible makeup. And the other two are just me being mad they didn't just do MASH.
John, you're not getting MASH. You're not going to get your MASH.
We might.
We might. If we keep could. Trying.
Yeah. Every Star Trek series has at least one decent episode. It's going to happen for this one. It's got to. There's got to be one in it, surely.
Am going to be even more harsh and say that the new Star Trek episodes don't have the range to be trip-nippable. They don't have the source. They don't have the curseness. They don't have the energy that brings forth tripnips. This one particularly to me was just, okay, sure, the hair was bad. That is pretty trip-nippable. We'll give it a solid 4 at least. But what
the
can
shit
I add
jambalaya.
To that?
I forgot about the shit.
But that's
jambalaya.
Just boring. That's like fucking Tesco brand jambalaya. I can't give that tripnips. So, you know what? I'm going to match your 4 because it did not give me anything.
And Matt, what's your score?
Depression sound.
I've checked the spreadsheet and a depression sound is a 2.
I was leaning towards 2 because any more, when you said 4, I was quite surprised.
It seems conservative in a way.
I think the thing with this episode is that it doesn't do anything except make you angry. And not angry in a good way, because you can get episodes that make you angry because it's taking things in a direction you weren't expecting. And you're like, oh, but hang on. And they can build on that. Whereas in this, they don't do anything. So, yeah, I'm going to go with the 2, I think.
It's 3 1/3 nipples. You've got like 3 nipples. There's a weird little bit coming up.
Fucking bring in these half formed nipples. You know, it's what? I'm back out. I had come full circle to be pro trip nip, and I'm back out. I'm done. The Stockholm syndrome has worn off. This is heathenry manifest.
But to be fair, it gets people talking, because you know I'm pretty sure that someone will go, I can't believe you only gave 4 trip nips to that episode. It's at least a 6 because of these reasons.
I'm sure someone's going to call us out for the lack of consistency in our trip nip scoring.
And you know what? they can go fuck themselves. You know what? They're gonna fuck him. Oh,
we'll give them a free trip, Nimsha. It's fine. We'll win them over.
So now, Olivia, we have to get to the end game, the climax of an I Quit Starchic episode, which is...
I mean, I gave you a speech about enlightenment and that was cut short, but I will continue it. We are now at the point of which we can all progress to a higher plane of existence. You're welcome. So what is on the high art list? John, you have the actual look.
The list includes such episodes as Journey to Babel, The Storyteller, Threshold,
of course.
Blink of an Eye.
Wait, hold on. Pause. Threshold?
That was...
When did I let Threshold in?
July last year.
Fuck. Okay, continue.
There's a spreadsheet for this.
There's a spreadsheet.
Yeah,
John got the back.
there's a spreadsheet.
I could open it, but effort.
You don't. what other episodes are on here? This Side of Paradise, The Naked Time, Tuvix. Hmm? And many others.
Hold on. Sorry, there's been some hacking afoot here.
Tuvix. That was Matty.
I did not put Tuvix on the high art list.
No, you did.
Sorry.
You go back and listen.
I'm so sorry. I think I need to release a public statement. this is a disaster.
I went back and watched Tuvix after the Lower Decks episode because I couldn't really remember it. And then I went back and watched the Lower Decks episode, and it was even funnier because the gags in that one are just so on point. So yes, it's
the best part of the Lower Decks episode is every time they go, I'm sure Janeway had a sensible response to this, and it's like, does she know she didn't?
Listen, she was valid, and she should kill that bitch. Anyway, he deserved it. Honestly, it's not even about the ethics of splitting someone up. It's about the fact that he was annoying.
Yeah. You're basic. Bang.
He was just an annoying guy. We've got to get rid of him somehow. So if you have anything to submit to my personal Hall of Fame, it has to meet strict subjective guidelines that I cannot even articulate. Do you have anything?
But from this episode, or just
from
all
the
Trek?
Whole catalogue of Star Trek that you might like to submit to be on this very special accolade?
I kind of teased it earlier when I said the Defector.
Defector is high art. I need more info.
Have
you never seen the Defector?
You guys are going to have to do the Defector because it's
fantastic. We're doing the Defector when I do, when we do our actual good episode series, because the Defector is great.
Do I recognize any of this? Let me see.
The Defector, it's Data does a bunch of Shakespeare. It's a Romulan guy.
It's in. All you have to say is Shakespeare, John. It's over. It's in. It's high art.
They do Henry V.
Oh my gosh. Wait. I see the flashback scene. Now I remember this. Well, is this a holodeck scene or something? Okay, sorry. All you need to do is have a little hint of Shakespeare. Not in a boring fucking Picard way. In a cool Data way. And I'm in.
Honestly, Olivia, it is fun.
It's great.
It's been a while since I've gone back for TNG, but no, we have success. We have success and we have consensus.
Huzzah.
Another victory for the free world. I will now pass over to you, Matt, to plug your own shows, content, to our wide audience.
Hello, wide audience. I, when my wife lets me, I do a podcast called The Damcasters, which is all about aviation history. And we basically try to cover as much of stuff that flies as we can. So we've done monks jumping off of towers and getting decent hang time. That was quite fun. We're going to need to go back and do that. And then there's all kinds of things, lots of interviews with interesting people. This week's one was with Melanie Astles, who's an aerobatics pilot, basically reminding me I need to do more core exercises, which was motivating. And I've now two or three beers into the evening. So clearly that's not been as motivating as it should be. But yeah, do check us out. We're just Damcasters Pod all over the place, and you can check us out. We've got some fun interviews coming up with people talking about the SR-71 and Ben Rich, who's the guy who helped design it.
But yeah, if you like aviation, flying monks, Bomber Command, airships that are dumb, yeah, check out the Damcasters. But yeah,
a podcast thank you. Host that's a bit dumb himself. Yeah. get that in before you do, John. There we go.
But thank you so much, Matt, for joining us for a fun but slightly grim run through an episode that no one enjoyed here. I'm sure somebody, I know people who enjoyed that episode. I don't think enjoying something makes you a bad person, but I think we kind of agree it could be better. But I really appreciate getting to do this episode with you. It's been on my list for ages. And Olivia, I'm sorry I inflicted it on you.
Yeah, I'm stronger for it. It didn't kill me.
So until next week, don't crash a blimp in France because you're shagging a Romanian. Or don't, or write better Star Trek. It's your choice.
The latter, please.
Bye, everyone. I support the first one. Bye-bye.